Bob Dobbs is the author of Fata Communion. If you just put him within Google, you are going to come up with hundreds of hints. And some of them will send you to somebody called J.R. Bob Dobbs, but the real one is right here with us tonight. And so it's been long overdue since we had on the media colleges here on KPFK. And it is always an honor to speak with you, sir. And how are you this lovely morning?
Evan, great to be back. Good morning.
Well, good morning to you, Bob. It's been such a long time. You know, I hope everything is fantastic. And, you know, what's great is that I saw you on the cover of a magazine.
Yes, that's Paranoia.
Yes.
The new issue's on the stands in good stores that offer a variety of, you know, the range of alternative magazines and regular magazines. So whatever that is in L.A., go there and you'll find Paranoia.
And is it the April? It's the April cover, right?
Yes.
Sweet.
Now, the interesting thing about it is it bills me on the cover as the only man alive. Now, that's a pretty strange statement. How can someone be the only person alive? Well, let me approach that dealing with the title of the magazine, Paranoia, and the stories you mentioned just before you brought me on about the Al-Qaeda and Pamela Martin, is it?
Oh, no, not Pamela Martin. That's funny that you would think of her, right? No, it's the D.C. Manum.
Yeah, Pamela Martin's her name?
Deborah Palfrey.
Oh, where did the name Pam Martin come from?
Pam Martin was the name of her associates. Pam Martin and Associates was the escort service, but she was the madam behind it.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
So taking those two stories, especially the Al-Qaeda one, would make maybe the consumer of that information slightly paranoid, at least about the image of their government and protectorates around them called national bureaucracies.
Yeah.
The magazine Paranoia deals with that effect. And I would like to cite two stories right now. Have you heard of the battle over the Dutch bank ABN? ABN, as in Ned. ABN AMRO?
Yes.
You've been reading that?
Yes.
Because there's a merger between ABN AMRO and Barclays.
Right.
And the Royal Bank of Scotland says they can offer a better deal, and so they're arguing over who ABN AMRO should merge with or whether it should be broken up.
Right.
On behalf of a certain part of the shareholders. So what's interesting, you have Tom Hennigan at the Stu website saying that what is going on there behind the scenes is that the Queen of England and the Queen of the Netherlands, Juliana, have stolen money from the U.S. Treasury with the assistance of Hillary Clinton and both Clintons and President Bush. So they're dupes of the British. Then you have Chris Story, a British journalist who runs worldreports.org, saying that ABN AMRO has been the repository for gold, all the gold being stolen out of the Bank of England by George Bush and his cronies, Dick Cheney and that.
Yeah.
So the British reporter says the Americans are profiting from stealing all the gold out of the Bank of England, and the American journalist Tom Hennigan says that the British are profiting from the emptying of the U.S. Treasury into ABN AMRO. So in this pattern of two versions of a particular story, the respective citizens of those countries could be paranoid about the other country. So it seems that the kind of information that attracts people and fascinates people generates paranoia. And that is a situation we're in now that's really difficult to overcome. It's basically called the age of terror now, right?
Yes.
So what would one say in the information environment that enhances paranoia to counter that paranoia? That's the issue that I work with. So I find it really appropriate to be on the cover of Paranoia magazine and represent a way of seeing through the paranoia.
Well, don't you think, though, that in this post-information age that people already understand the link between Bush and the Queen and that they aren't different? They work at the same level and are partners in crime. I mean, You know, it would seem that people with further investigation would eclipse what Tom and the gentleman with World Reports would be saying to understand that, well, no, it's not each country. It's these people that have no allegiance to country.
Yes, the resonant node that you mentioned at the beginning, which is a theme I go back over and over again, the resonant node of the Android meme is one entity, one digital image that feeds on itself.
Yes.
And that all the categories that one makes about that, national, corporate, ethnic, racial, gender, class divisions, artistic and cultural divisions, are subsets and fantasy around that one thing.
But how can you have paranoia in a post-information age? Because you can know and actually answer those fears.
What was the last word?
You could answer those fears.
Yes. I say that you couldn't have paranoia. But because paranoia is obsolete, it is what is marketed, not only by the fringe, but the mainstream, or vice versa. The mainstream markets the age of terror, and the fringe are paranoid about what's generating the paranoia. They blame it on the White House, or on the Queen, or on China, or some conspiracy cabal, when actually there could not be a cabal and could not be communicating to us when we're in a self-reflective loop that only has one element that can't be translated. That's the nature of the Android meme, and that's what I'm always trying to explain. So when I say I'm the only man alive, that refers to the fact we are all the only person alive, but we can't really delineate what the constituents of that person is. Because if there's only one thing that can't be translated in the Android meme, it is the only thing alive. If you know that and see through that, you'd have to say, well, I'm the one conscious of that condition, so I'm the only man alive. And that's what I claim. And so it's a communication issue.
Right.
An understanding of what we're dealing with in this information society, which is now flipped into a post-information society.
But how do new ideas, like new technologies, like you say, there's a reaction within the four bodies to new technologies coming out. How does that emanate out of a resonating node that's reflecting on itself?
Yeah, it doesn't, though you do have four bodies. But you cannot communicate the effects of that node on your four bodies to anybody else or to any other thing.
But you're saying that new technologies like the cell phone, 911 was September 11th. How does that fit within the resonating node?
Well, that's a pattern. You'll see a repeating pattern in any major event. You can always look at it numerologically, what the numbers are, what the names refer to, and what the dates are, and what is the meaning of the event. But as John Baudrillard points out, the event is immediately canceled by hyper-coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And the hyper-coverage distorts the event, and we never get to experience the event.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people think you're experiencing when you're engaging in the coverage, but the coverage is like a thermonuclear blast.
Yes.
That wipes out the essence of the event. Mm-hmm. And so this phenomenon began with the JFK assassination, and that's why a major factor in the mystery of the JFK assassination, and it never gets resolved and understood, and even if someone did figure it out, when they communicate it, it gets lost in the clash of opinions and coverage of that press conference. So the JFK assassination was like the first postmodern mystery in a post-information society. It wasn't actually the post-information society at that point, but it was the beginning of an event which was very significant, being lost in the coverage.
So what is knowledge then if we are, most of our attitudes, most of our information is given to us in this way?
Knowledge would be the recognition that nothing can be known, and then you develop a relationship with that. Now, that's very hard to do. That means you'd have to say, well, I'm not an American. I'm not black, white, or Chinese. I'm not a woman or a man. I'm not an automobile owner. If it's all a seamless web, then any of those objects or categories have no substance. And so you begin with the fact you're nothing. And you could see in the popular culture the resonance of Zen Buddhism with the beatniks in the 50s and 60s and the idea of the void. Those were conceptual, cultural, religious memes that resonate with the fact, the technological fact of the disappearance of categories. But even those don't approximate and represent a communication about the situation. They're just retrievals. So we're always having homeopathic, tiny and tinier retrievals as a fill-in for the fact that you can't know where we're at. It's in theology, a level of exegesis known as eschatological or eschatology.
Mm-hmm.
So the grasping for straws and ultimate mysteries, we're in that situation now, and that could be the fifth horseman if you talk about the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Apocalypse mean revelation. The fifth horseman is the revelation of all these things as content and how they can't be translated.
But yet, they rule our lives.
They only rule the communication world that you rely on.
But people kill each other. They do things to their bodies.
That's communication. That's how they communicate.
Oh.
The reason in the age of terror, where they're in a post-information situation, the prominent image of communication is to blow yourself up. So a big factor in the present Iraq war is not over oil or manipulation for certain factions in the Middle East, either Islamic or Jewish or
Christian.
Yeah. It is the fact that the cameras are all looking at Iraq because it is expressing the nature of our communication void all over the world. And what that means is when you communicate, you blow yourself up. So you see in any of the major communication icons of this decade, they all end up disintegrating. Take Anna Nicole Smith. Mm-hmm. Take Katie Couric. Mm-hmm. Take Oprah. Mm-hmm. Now, the interesting thing is that they collapse, like Rosie O'Donnell, and then they retreat, but then they collapse again. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's communicating in a major way will be obliterated. So that is the fact in the digital chip body world and the TV body world, and that gets expressed by the chemical body aspect of blowing yourself up. So the suicide bombers are miming, in their terms, what we're doing to ourselves here.
Wow.
Or in the chip body and TV body.
Oh, I love that, Bob. We have to come back to that. Blowing up, reconforming itself in a
It's not about oil. The reason it attracts attention is because it resonates with what's going on collectively in the information matrix we've created. I mean, you can look at what happened in the 60s. Those things that became prominent in the media, generally leading into the counterculture, resonated with the effect of the satellite environment.
Right.
And then what was prominent in the 80s were corporate raiders, were junk bonds, and return of the businessman as a charismatic image. That resonated with the sort of the expression of the Android meme when it was viable in the 80s.
You know what, darling? Let me just do this quick break because I want to get back and get into this with you. I have this music going. Let me just remind folks. On the line, Bob Dobbs. See, this is why more often this man needs to be with us. Such great fun speaking with him in these terms and once again bathing ourselves in the language of post-informational memehood. All right. This is KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM up there in beautiful Santa Barbara. And we'll be back after this very short break. Radio Alchemy.
Eclipsing conventional wisdom. All alchemists converge at www.radioalchemy.com for streaming audio and more.
And you know, darlings, the way to get to RadioAlchemy.com is through kpfk.org. Fantastic website, so much information, all the happenings. You get to see all the great programming that Roy does overnight in his program guide. You'll find Radio Alchemy there. And then you'll be able to go to the site and working on getting that puppy up and keeping it viable and beautiful for you. All right? So we'll be back with Bob Dobbs very shortly.
It's the future. Tomorrow time.
On the lines, Bob Dobbs. His website is www.fivebodied.com. And bodied, that's five, spelt out, And then Bodied, BODIED.com. It's a forum. You get to see lots of information. Join in on the discussion and learn so much more at 5bodied.com. Okay, Bob, you were talking about what we are seeing in the Middle East, the blowing up as such, and that it happens at different levels within the medium spectrum, with television stars, and out on the battlefield.
Right. Now, I was saying that in the 90s, you had the afterimage of the Android meme. That was the selling of the Internet. And then in this decade, you have the post-Android meme, post-Y2K, where there is no communication matrix. That's why the decade of the 90s ended with the movie The Matrix, that trilogy, which was summing up the Android meme phase from, say, the early 70s to the late 80s, early 90s. It was a rearview mirror celebration of the Android meme, but it wasn't pointing to what the facts were in this decade. Now, let's take the word media. You ever noticed? Well, you have noticed. Everybody's heard this since, I would say, since the early 60s. People started talking about, well, this is what we want to do, and this is what we did do, but the media did this. And they talked about the media. That was the word, as if it was something out there. You know, what is this media that's out there?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was look at that word. It was a popular expression of the intuition that the confluence of all these previous huge media environments of the last half of the 19th century and the first half of the 20th century had converged under satellite conditions. And it had taken on a life of its own. So people talked about what I call the Android meme, but the way they did it was using the word media. So McLuhan popularized that phrase with his book, Understanding Media.
Yes.
And people talked about the media as something out there like running amok, a loose thing. And they usually thought it meant ads, maybe PR, hype, and news. But that actually was the word that made the market. And everything was inside that and revolved around it. What happened in the 90s is people were propped up by the post-Android meme celebration of the user as the content or user-generated content. And so people started to feel superior to the media, make fun of the media. They had replaced it, supplanted it.
Yeah, but isn't it that we are media?
Yeah, we became the media.
But we've always been media.
Well, we always have, but we're talking about the proper expression of the word media and how that was seen as something out there separate from us.
Okay, very good.
You're right. So, but we were, McLuhan's point was, we were the media. They were extensions of us. But the perception that it was out there was an accurate perception of the fact that information had taken on a life of its own and was like a cancer metastasis. You know what I mean? Just something that swallowed up any kind of sensible imparting of a message and destroyed it. I mean, Andy Warhol said, you'll be famous in 15 minutes.
Right.
And then he said later in the 70s that everyone will be famous. No, he said, in 15 minutes, everyone will be famous.
Right.
So that was the last gasp of communication in the 70s. That's Studio 54, dancing around the disco ball, which represented the solar government or the satellite theater. But we're in this situation now where you have YouTube and people can make their own content, their own fantasy projection, and be like their own little Katie Couric and make their own entertainment media for other people to consume. So that is a powerful position that counters the idea that the media is something out there that I can't control. Now you can control your media. So now we've become the media.
But that's interesting. I mean, you're talking, for one, with the absolute barrage of information on the Internet, who sees this communication? And so is it just, you know, mental masturbation for individual self-aggrandizement?
Yeah, it's mental chip body, TV body masturbation. That's why everybody, as I presented in my memo to Prince Charles, was on the album Bob's Mediacology, I explained that everybody moved into a solipsistic mythic stage. Mm. Myth being whatever collection of media you used that you basically engaged with and had a religious relationship with. That was back in the late 80s. Now everybody has all the media interactive in one way to use and manipulate because it's shrunk, becoming user-friendly. So when everybody's communicating, then there's no standard of communication and no social space that people can measure themselves off. So in that situation, it's a zero-sum effect. And so nobody's communicating and connecting with anybody else.
Right. You know, that's so weird. I mean, I was in San Francisco the other week, and I came back to L.A., and I just got this feeling in L.A. and that there is a really big disconnect, and there's almost a really thicker skin and kind of a rudeness that is going on. Let me ask you, the environment right now, there is this real breakdown in civility. A lot of hate speech out there, a lot of just really girding to take off the gloves and boot PC, political speech, to the side and just get very raw about things. What does that represent?
That is the old media communication matrix responding to the age of terror. So people think they have to get tough, so they add a tough shell to their chip body and their TV body.
But they're attacking other Americans. They're attacking minorities. They're attacking women. They're attacking men that don't want to go to war. I mean, they're attacking. It's cannibalistic. They're eating themselves.
And it's being countered and counterattacked. The point is that people get tough when the bully ain't around, when you can't get hurt. So that's this whole syndrome you've just spelled out is an example of there is no audience, no social space, and no information being exchanged that have consequences, because if that was the case, you'd be a little more polite, because you're going to get a punch in the nose if someone's going to hear what you're saying. Mm-hmm. But if nobody's going to hear it and nobody's going to be able to respond to it because they're too busy communicating their little bubble, then you can get tough because you don't have to be afraid.
So
there you have the paradox in the age of terror. People, which is post-information terror, go back into the old bodies and act out scenarios of toughness because nobody's there anymore.
Right. Oh, wow. That's very, very interesting. And also all this dearth of programming around like fear factor. I mean, it seems that that shock, you know, shock television, shock jocks, is that the only way that people can feel?
Yes. Or, what you have here, when you're in a new environment, the old environment becomes the repository for values. So, for example, Shakespeare wrote plays about the medieval period, the medieval kings and tragedies and celebrations. That's because the new printing press was coming in, so it turned the old manuscript environment into a valuation or repository of spiritual or cultural values. And just to speed it up, once you brought in television, then what was recycled as something with new significance? Movies.
Hmm.
All right?
Yes.
Movies became art form. Right. Andrew Sarris' auteur theory, the new wave out of Paris. So now we've moved well beyond that, and we have a chip body and a TV body and a chemical body and an astral body inside a post-information matrix, an eschatological mystery body. And so therefore the TV body becomes a repository of your values. The value is, I'm going to get back at that strange phenomenon of the media, and I'm going to beat it up. So I get on the TV body or the chip body, and I act aggressive about memes and archetypes and stereotypes that don't exist in the post-information society. So we've actually turned violence into an art form, which McLuhan predicted in the 70s. It's become an aesthetic art form because no one's there to punch us back on the nose so we can really express our id.
Now, usually, like in psychological terms, somebody that acts out and is very like aggressive and mean, etc., they say actually that they are projecting their own self-hatred. So how does that resonate if you are a generator getting back? So you're really like castrated and trying to get something back because you're really pissed off that you don't have power. So you're lashing out at other people to make yourself feel better. How does that all work?
In a post-information society, you don't have metaphor anymore. A metaphor is looking at one situation through another. And all communication has been metaphorical. People through speech, you know, let's say 30,000 years ago, through speech they were able to translate their expression of their experience in the jungle or wherever they were
to
another human being who had that ability. And then later writing and then manuscripts and then printing and telegraph and newspapers and radio and movies, all these were means of translating the previous repository of metaphor into new context, changing the context, but building up the ability to have metaphor. I say in the post-information era, we have a presidential White House image that resonates with the fact we can't translate ourselves into any old medium anymore because they've all become a seamless web. So you have an image of a leader who can't express himself. He cannot be translated. So when we are in the situation where that's reflecting our present situation, a post-information society that can't be made into a metaphor or a metonymy, another kind of metaphor, cannot be translated because there's only one node and there's nothing else to for it to see itself through, then people will become hyper-frenetic in communicating, propping up the old media and pretending they are effective, but knowing that they aren't effective, they can be tough or rude or over-loving in these various forms of media. So we are hoiking up all the old media, all the old metaphors, as a buffer and protection because we cannot handle living in a situation where there's no social agreed-upon metaphor about what time it is.
Now, people would say that Rosie O'Donnell was effective, that she was getting across and talking to that paranoia that people have, and you know, maybe it's not paranoia anymore because post-information allows you to see so many sources for you to make up your own mind. But she was out there speaking her own mind. They would say that she was effective in her communication, and that cost her. That's different from what you're saying, or somebody would ask that of you.
You're saying that what I'm saying it doesn't explain what she went through.
Right.
The interesting thing is that in this situation where the word makes the market and The View and Katie Couric and Oprah and those shows, used to be Good Morning America for Katie Couric,
Yeah. They
established the tone, mood, and icon for the next 24 hours. Now, it has a subatomic half-life because the next day is going to be canceled. Now, the idea is you cannot maintain a point of view and see and claim that you're getting a message across. The interesting hypocrisy of the post-information age is that we like the fact that there's no metaphor that we can translate ourselves into. And if you start being on message and being effective, you're going to frighten and confuse the issue because no message can have any staying power. So that's why presidential candidates are very careful not to establish their position right now. They will never establish a position, but they'll pretend they do the weekend before the election.
Well, they all say the same thing, health care, education.
Yeah, they throw up memes
it's
and icons.
All the same
that
stuff.
That represent social community.
Right, exactly.
Okay, because that's the function of the White House, is to represent social community. But we know that doesn't work anymore because it fails in that level. Because there is no a social community is metaphor. Consensus is metaphorical and sociality. So we can't have that happening since we can't have a metaphor. So if anybody starts staying on message like Rosie O'Donnell and having an issue, say like Ralph Nader, they are seen as impractical and ruining the point that every new day has to be different for setting a mood through the Good Morning America or Oprah shows. Every day has to be different or people get bored. And you can't have that boredom in the old TV body. You can have diversity in the chip body, and that's what it's for stimulation.
Right.
That's great. That's digression. But you have to balance it off with a stability. But the stability is to have perpetual change. So these factors I'm describing are the ABCs that should be taught, at least in high school, maybe earlier. The dialogue should be presented to kids so that they understand the communication illusion that they're being trained for. Now, if I mean what I just said and I want to implement it, then I'm staying on message, right?
Yeah.
That ain't going to work, is it?
No.
So I don't need to implement in schools. I just need to get people to hear your archives or hear me, and they can replay this or YouTube it and listen to it, and you can secretly get it. And then at that point, you can really start to communicate in a curious way, because you know that no communication is effective, that will lead to innovation of how people pretend they're communicating. Mostly today, we're bored at the retreat, like politicians keep replaying fake attempts at communication. traditional stereotypical fake means. They don't have any power because we recognize them, and that ain't dealing with the situation.
Well, isn't then the idea of just going nonverbal, isn't that communication like violence, sex, food, what babies gesture, dog's tail wagging? I mean, does that somehow bring back a level of tactile communication?
Yeah, we're not promoting tactility. Tactility is the fact we live in. But what is the most prominent form of communication today? It's American Idol. That's the thing that ostensibly has the biggest ratings. That little
That's
kid
scary.
Who was on American Idol, the one that...
Sanjay.
What?
Sanjay?
Yeah. He was featured as the main star at the White House Correspondents Association dinner.
Oh, my God. No way.
Yeah. And I read that in some newspaper here in New York City. I didn't watch it. I didn't know anything about it. I wasn't even here in New York, but I read it when I came back. And that guy represented that week's high ratings. He was the core point of the TV body, part of the Android meme. And so that's transitory. He'll be gone, or he's gone now already,
right.
But he was there. And then next year, they'll have me there. For some reason, I'll have become the only man alive, and then I'll be the guest, and you'll be amazed, right?
Oh, you're saying so Sanjay at that point was alive?
Yeah. Good point. Was he alive? No, he wasn't, because he probably does not understand why he was there and why he'll be kicked out, and then if he identifies with that process, he will be confused.
Is Bush alive?
No, nobody's alive. I'm the only one alive because I'm the only one that can explain exactly what's going on. And it feels like I'm the only one alive because nobody can understand me. You understand me temporarily as I'm talking because I'm a good communicator. It's the power of the rhetorician. I impart meaning as I'm talking. It makes sense as I'm doing it. But tomorrow morning, you try to explain what I just said to someone down the street.
I'll say, listen to the tape.
Yeah, listen to the tape, and they won't get it. Because they might get a bit of it, but they're not in the moment. Right now, we've got a level of ESP going on. I'm good at imparting that. A sense that you're getting what I mean. And I'm pretending that you're getting what I'm saying.
Yes.
I can impart that. So that's the power of whatever it is, of rhetoric or of speech in this situation. And therefore, I can remain alive in this situation to do that. And even if I was put in Sanjay's position and was hoiked up as the flavor of the minute for a while, for whatever reason, hey, look at this freak. He's like, he's the only man alive. It wouldn't mean one thing in my situation because I could go through that, yet not identify with it, yet be able to explain things after and even before and predicted, but I wouldn't have an identity involved with it. Most people identify with communication. That's the core thing. You can watch people maybe being indifferent, saying, I don't have any points of view. I don't want to talk about it. They identify with that strategy, that posture. Others, you talk to them, they're very serious about their point of view, right?
Right.
About what they think is going on. And they also will spend a lot of time maybe on the Internet studying things and gathering information and making little pamphlets and trying to get someone to look at something.
Right, right.
So they really do take communication very seriously.
Well, you do.
No, I don't. I don't identify with the communication process. That's how you have imagination. You don't get embedded with what you're trying to say. And that way you see through it, and I can see the effects of it on you and the effects of you on me, and I keep paying attention to that. That's the ESP part.
Oh, so the effects.
Yeah.
On the lines, loves, Bob Dobbs. Huh. Isn't this great? This is the kind of thing that we get to do here on KPFK because of you and because of your generous support of this listener-sponsored radio station. All right, loves. Bob is on the line. His website is www.fivebodied.com. And make sure and go out to the best newsstand you know and get the edition of Paranoid Magazine. He's on the cover, dagnabbit. Isn't that fun?
Yeah, Rocket. Paranoia.
Yeah, paranoia. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, not paranoid, but paranoia. They know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, noia is knowing. So you get a pair of forms of noia. So doubleness is what I say we were. We've now extended our doubleness to the Android meme, so we're quadrophenic. We've got two sets of doublenesses. We're a pair of noia. Noia being Latin for knowing.
So what are you saying, that the the quad angle of us is the four bodies. Is that
yes.
it? Okay.
Yes.
Let me remind folks, KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in beautiful Santa Barbara. Bob is on the line, and we'll be back with him before you know it. All right.
Where the past and the future converge. Go to www.radioalchemy.com. RadioAlchemy.com for streaming audio and more.
All right, darlings, you know that kpfk.org is the website to go to get some goodies, to see what's going on in a neighborhood right around you, to go out and use that quadraphenic cellular mass of electrical, biological, waterlogged goodness, and make it so. On the line is Bob. Website, www.fivebody.com. Now, as you were talking, you mentioned something about the market demanding the metaphysical word. Could you talk a little bit more about that if you were done with your train of thought from previous?
Let me get to that in a second. I just want to say a supplementary thing about the fad of chemical bodies blowing themselves up in Baghdad. If you notice on a show like Coast to Coast with George Norrie,
yes,
every night, I don't listen to every night, but any time I catch it in passing through, there's always someone on there saying, yeah, World War III, nuclear Armageddon's coming up on May 5th. There's always someone predicting something. Every night, he usually has someone with some devastating apocalyptic Armageddon kind of scenario.
Right.
In the information society or the... We call it his show as part of the radio body and TV body, not necessarily a chip body, but they merged today. But let's just say it's a TV body sensibility because they discuss the fate of the nation, the fate of the economy, and all these old chemical body social spaces. And they all come on there and project a blowing up of them, a disaster. Like one of the scenarios they had on recently was a guy who said that the government is going to starve half the people of North America and put the rest in concentration camps.
Yeah.
So these kind of scenarios of devastation and social betrayal and concentration camp existence are presented constantly. That is a that's a mental blowing up of social space.
Yes.
That's destroying your sense of security and some kind of protection that's do you down the road, just the whole crisis of what about Social Security pensions and all that.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
So we talk about social memes blowing up, and they don't have the complex, sophisticated information environment we have in North America and Western Europe. In the Middle East, they don't. They got pretty beginning levels of complexity, but the people still live in situations where the chemical body seems prominent. So they blow themselves up. But we do it on an information pattern level. So I just wanted to show you how the common thing of blowing ourselves up is not just in Baghdad. It's in our information environment, and it motivates a large part of the fascination in pop culture. And what was the popular image in this period of the last 6 years? Anna Nicole Smith, a woman who blew herself up several times, you know, with overweight, with obesity, with weird statements in public, with her own family, and then eventually she died, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a more extreme version of Marilyn Monroe,
right.
Under a negative sign, or even more apocalyptic than the 50s and 60s were.
Right.
So, the word that makes the market...
Or even like these reality shows where people eat maggots and things like that.
Right. We can look at the ghetto the chemical body as a ghetto. And then the TV body has become a ghetto now. That's American Idol. And the chip body was a ghetto until people had YouTube, and that keeps them going for the next year or so because they can enjoy in making their own stuff. But that'll become a ghetto.
I think it already has. I mean, it's not just YouTube now. There are hundreds of sites all doing the very same thing now.
Right. And so the word makes the market comes in, and the word used to be a television or presidential press conference. Generally, press conferences were the word making the market. But within the daily news cycle, what the White House was doing every day affected Wall Street and corporations around the world in them trying to determine what they're going to do for the next 3 months. So basically, the White House has been the word to make the market. Now that the White House has disappeared with everything else, the word now is a non-communicating afterimage, and that's George Bush. So right now, the word doesn't make the market, or it's the negative version of the word, the dark matter, dark energy of the word that makes the market.
So
yet that's been the course for five or six years. It seems that is not holding people together right now. That's not communicating. Dark energy, now a popular phrase in physics and in science, pop culture, is a sign that it's obsolete. So we're really into a period where Armageddon is going to come April 6th, and they were going to invade Iran, right?
Yeah.
Or
right,
next
right,
week.
Exactly.
Right. Or Katrina. Look at Katrina.
Yes.
They complain, where was the government? There was no government. Nobody's going to help you. That's another expression of the age of terror. There's no one there. So the end of the Bush image, if that's what's happening, and many people say the White House is now a bunker, right?
Yes.
Going down in flames. That's the end of the negative non-dark, non-energy, non-image, dark energy. So we're really nowhere now. And so it's very timely that this is going on in 2007 and someone shows up on the cover magazine saying, the only man alive, I'm the only one left. Everybody else has been wiped out. Even the word that makes the market.
And why is it a metaphysical word?
Metaphysical is not limited to the chemical. What is the mind? We're not sure of the boundaries. Some say it's chemical. Some say, no, it's spiritual or astral.
Electrical.
Intermingled with chemical brain. It's never been determined what exactly our minds are. And so since the electric environment was the extension of our brains and our minds, that's why I say the word or the metaphysical or the non-physical is the stimulator of the market. And a large part of the market is just information exchange. It was information exchange. That's what Baudrillard called it, the ecstasy of communication. We're now post the ecstasy of communication. And so that's why people are going to get tough.
So tell me, in being outside, what does that do for your life? What would somebody actually attain or understand? What would happen for them if they were able to see as you do?
They wouldn't survive it. It requires like a 10-year yoga course, just like the old cultures, the mystical esoteric cultures, offered discipline retreat, and then you'd move toward nirvana or enlightenment or something.
Right.
And then there was the Christian version of that. You had to retreat from the social matrix and engage with yourself, and that was a dangerous process, and it had to be guided. What I'm offering is the fallacy and weakness of those traditions, but a new kind of discipline, which you can do in the safety of your own mind, whatever you want to call that mind made up of four bodies, and so it's a yoga. So it's a long term of study. Now, the problem is that nobody has time to do that. They're wiped out too quickly.
Right,
so that's
right.
Another reason why I'm the only man alive. I'm never going to have any students. They're never going to survive long enough.
Right, right.
And so the popular expression of blowing people up again, Virginia Tech, April 16th, I think it was. Guy just goes in, wipes out 30 people.
Yeah.
That kind of social anarchy is the expression of the inability in this situation to develop a wisdom or an imaginative response to the situation.
So
that's how bad it is.
Well, it sounds like there's vast loneliness then.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it
vast emptiness, a lot of dark energy.
Is there a feeling of abandonment, like we had an expectation?
Yeah, feeling of being ripped off. Every part of society, every institution feels like it was ripped off. That started in the 60s. And so the only solution for this is a new form of post-information energy power source. And that's where we come back to my constant theme of cold fusion. it's going to get us out of this situation.
Right.
Via China. So until that point, we've got to deal with the social devastation of no one being able to stay focused long enough to get my message and to learn how to live with it. Now, there's a few people on 5body.com are staying with it, but you go there, looks pretty psychopathic to me.
I was reading some of the posts. I mean, certainly people do dip down into the dark matter, and then they, you know, come back up and get back on the ball. But like you said,
a lot of death threats being made, a lot of love overtures, a lot of confusion. But at least they're there. There's only 2,000, 2 million of us there, but that's puny compared to the 6 billion people we got, right?
Certainly.
So there's a core being built at Dobbstown in the 5body of minds that could say, I made it to the last round. I didn't get there all the way, but I was there the longest with Bob. Bob never really got his message to me, but I stayed in there in his class the longest. That's what you witness at 5body.
Right.
People fighting to stay there the longest. It's an endurance test.
That it is. Yes, it absolutely is. And I'm not a part of 5body because of the crazy schedule, but certainly I have your works.
Well, you have me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's even better. Now, God, let me see. What was I thinking about? Talk about then, is it then? I mean, so who is creating? What is creating? Why is it dark matter? Why does it have to be dark matter? Why can't this node flip us into ecstasy?
So we get into the word, the phrase or word tactility. Tactility is not a sense, it's the interplay of the senses. And as television extended the tactile sense, television is not one sense, it's the interplay of the senses. And then the interplay of all the media through the digital technology created a digital version of a tactile environment. Television itself was a tactile medium, whereas the printed book was not tactile. But the interplay of all the electric and digital media since the 60s is a new collective tactile environment. Now, that means it's not any particular medium, and you can't say what color or sound or smell it has. It's the interplay. So it is the best metaphor our scientists can come up with. It's dark energy. It's dark matter. You can't see it. It's there somewhere. It's something, but we can't see it. Can't smell it.
Why is it negative?
Beg your pardon?
Why is it negative? Why is it destructive?
It's negative in relation to all the previous cultural biases. Every culture up to the 20th century was biased because it was a slower time, a slower medium, and so you could rest and mingle and play and work within that slow cultural medium. And every culture around the world had its particular medium.
Yes,
and
but...
And was rice.
Well, I doggone it, we're out of time. Well, we're just going to have to pick it up from there. And also, we didn't get into, I wanted to talk to you about just the notion of revelations, the apocalypse, and how that, you know, if that, what, the whole world blows itself up? I mean, it's amazing.
No, it's revelation. It's tactility.
Right.
The extension of tactility is the apocalypse.
Okay. All right. Well, Bob, fantastic. Really great fun, and congratulations on Paranoia and all the great stuff. And really look forward to having you on sooner than later. It was really great.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Evan.
All right, dear. So, Bob, hey, his website, www.5bodied.com, 5bodied.com. Did you guys get that? We just got to keep going over it and a release. Just to release some of those previous modalities that we've been using to understand the world get a whole new perspective on it. I'm doing that, working at it, and you guys too. It's all good. All right.